Okay. Something in the two passages that Alex read is we need to be an example. Both of those passages had something to do with us being an example to those in the world. If you will, turn to Titus chapter 2. And this is really where this message is coming from, is Titus 2 starting with verse 6. Titus 2 starting with verse 6. There he says, "Exhort the young men to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern for good works, in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say about you." And so Paul is instructing a young preacher here, Titus. He is instructing him. He's working in Crete with a very young congregation, and he's encouraging them to encourage all the brethren that they can live in such a way that their life is a pattern or an example. And the word there, pattern, means an example or an influence. And so he's saying that we should all live in a way that we are an example to those in the world, those who we come in contact with every day. In verse 7, there's a word there that stands out that I want us to note. It's there on the screen. Integrity. And of course, if you look this word up, it's going to say something to the effect of the adherence to moral and ethical principles. I think we all know what integrity is. We wear the name of Christ. By the very fact that we are Christians, we wear the name of Christ, and we need not to do anything that would bring shame on Jesus' name. And so we need to walk in integrity. We need to walk above reproach, and that's what he's saying here, is to walk and live in such a way that people cannot say bad about you. And if they do, they're put to shame because it's not true. If someone says something about you that is not right, others can say, well, no, that can't be the case because I know that he doesn't live like that. I believe that we can never know the impact that we have, good or bad, on the world. We'll never know the impact of the good or bad that we have on those in the world. I came across a story a couple weeks ago that I thought, well, this would go really good with this message. And I'll read that. It says that a man was being tailgated by a stressed-out woman on a busy boulevard. Suddenly, the light turned yellow just in front of him, and he stopped as the light was quickly turning red. The tailgating woman was furious and was honking her horn, cussing and throwing her arms around and dropping her phone and makeup bag. As she was still in mid-rant, she heard a tap at her window and she looked up into the face of a very serious police officer. The officer ordered her to exit her car with hands up, and he took her to the police station where she was searched, fingerprinted, photographed, and placed in a holding cell. After a couple of hours, a policeman opened the door to the cell and she was escorted back to the booking desk where the arresting officer was. He said to her, "I'm very sorry for this mistake. You see, I pulled behind your car while you were blowing your horn, flipping the man off in front of you and cursing a blue streak at him. I noticed the 'What Would Jesus Do?' bumper sticker on your car and the Jesus Fish license plate and another sticker that said, 'Honk if you love Jesus.' Naturally, I assumed the car had been stolen." I like that story because I think that's maybe an area that a lot of us struggle with. I think that's probably an area that the Lord is working in our lives. We need to live a life that is above reproach. We need to live a life that is an example. Here's a question I want us to try to answer. Am I living a life of integrity? And I want us to answer that to ourselves. Here are four questions that I want to ask, and in answering these four questions, maybe we can answer this. First of all, how is my Christian influence in my circle of friends? And those friends that I have, how is my Christian influence? Do they even know that I am a Christian? Do they know that I'm going to do what's right no matter what? What is my influence on them? Just ask yourself that. Number two, how would those who know me describe my Christianity? How would those who know me describe my Christianity? Would they describe my Christianity as being sincere, as being active? Would they describe my Christianity as being, well, that pretty much describes who he is? Could they describe my Christianity as being hypocritical? He says he's a Christian, he goes to church, I know that he does, but he sure doesn't act like it. How would they describe my Christianity? Here's another one. How important is Christian integrity to me? How important is the way that I am around those in the world, the things that I say, the attitude I have, my disposition, my attitude, everything about me, how important is that to me? Do I pretty much leave my Christianity here in the building? How important is it to me can I say, imitate me as I imitate Christ, as Alex read a little bit ago? Fourth, am I trying to live a life above reproach? Am I trying to live a life in such a way that those who are against me or looking for something wrong has nothing to say about me? And so these are four questions. My influence is so important. And sometimes I wonder, is the world conforming to me, or am I conforming to the world? You know, Paul says for us not to be conformed to the world, but be transformed. And sometimes I wonder, are we doing that, or are we becoming conformed to the world? How many in here believe that we, and you can raise your hand, how many in here believe that we as a nation is losing our influence on evangelizing the world? Almost everybody. I believe that we are losing our influence on evangelizing the world, not only the world, but our own nation. I really believe that, because we do not live, in so many cases, we do not live what we preach and teach and what we say that we believe. A couple of weeks ago, I said something about this, and I was kind of talking off the top of my head. I knew that I'd read it somewhere, but I couldn't remember where. But I found this. I looked it up. According to the National Gallup poll, North America is the only continent, get this, the only continent where Christianity is not growing. North America is the only continent where Christianity is not growing. It wasn't that long ago that Christianity was the fastest growing here than anywhere else. It says that there are 70 million people in America that classify themselves as being unchurched. 70 million people that classify themselves as not belonging to any church whatsoever. George Barna, you might be familiar with him. He writes a lot of Christian literature. He's not a member of the church, but he writes some good Christian literature, and he does a lot of different surveys and researches. And the research that he did last year, and this is just last year, 2010, he questioned and surveyed over 5,000 people concerning Christianity, concerning their beliefs. And here are five different results or conclusions that they came up with concerning that. Number one, the Christian church is becoming less theologically literate. The Christian church is becoming less theologically literate. What does that mean? That we don't know our Bible. That those simple Bible truths that our grandparents or great-grandparents, that our parents knew, and they're just simple Bible truths, we don't know. And we're raising a generation that does not know the Bible. So that simply means we're not reading our Bibles. We profess to believe it, but we don't read it and we don't know it. Henry and the elders have put in the bulletin the daily Bible readers. And some people do not like that, and I can see why, because, you know, how many in here is a daily Bible reader? And if you don't raise your hand, it can be embarrassing. And so I can understand why some people do not like that. It is not put in there to embarrass anybody, I assure you that. It's put in there to encourage us, because we need to see the need to read our Bibles. A second one, Christians are becoming more ingrown and less outreach-oriented. And it's kind of odd the way it's worded there, but that's the way they worded it. We've become more ingrown than outreach. What is that saying? That we're concerned about the church, we're concerned about our own little congregation, and we're not concerned about anybody outside of that. Now, in there are cases where a church is so concerned about mission work that they're not concerned about their own congregation. I've seen that some, to where they send missionaries out, they support so many different mission efforts, and they do nothing for the congregation. They don't spend any effort, any time, any money in their own congregation. And after a while, the congregation just gets smaller and smaller. And then if there's no congregation anymore, how can they support anybody else? And so we're certainly not saying that that we should not spend much time in our congregation. We should. We should have different, we should encourage everyone to be active. We should have programs that gets everybody involved in the work of the Lord in different ways. That's a good thing. But what this is saying, according to this survey, is that we're more concerned about that and about our programs and about our own little congregation, that we're happy, so happy with that and content with that, that we don't care about anybody outside of Christ. You know, Jesus said that we are to come out and be ye separate from the world. But he does not mean that we are to be alone, that we're to withdraw from the rest of the world. You know, the atheists are being more outspoken today than ever before. I was looking on the internet at the different events that the VBCC is holding, looking for something in particular, and I saw where they're about to have an atheist convention at the Von Braun. It's growing more and more in this area. I saw on the news the other day, I'm sure you have too, I think it was in the paper as well, about a billboard that is in Huntsville that says the Bible is a myth. It's not true. And then I actually saw that. Has anybody else seen that? There's actually a billboard in Huntsville that says that. The Bible is a myth. It's not true. Don't believe it. And so the atheists are becoming more and more outspoken against Christianity. And in the meantime, we just kind of, we're content a lot of times with our little group. You know, we're to be the salt and the light of the world. We have got to step out. We've got to live a life that is above reproach. We've got to live a life that people can say, that's a Christian. We've got to live a life that is going to draw people to Christ. We can't leave it here in this building. And that's what this survey is saying that we're doing, many of us are doing. Number three, a growing number of people are less interested in spiritual principles and desire more of learning practical solutions to life. Basically, that's saying that there are a growing number of people that do not see the need to read their Bible, that those spiritual principles are not relevant to them, and so they don't see where the Bible is relevant at all in their life. You know, Peter says that he has given us all things pertaining to life and godliness, 2 Peter 1 and verse 3. And so, as we know as Christians that this is supposed to be a guidebook. You know, this is supposed to be a book that tells us how to live. But the survey says and shows that there are less and less people that think that this is relevant in their life. They want to know more just concerning this world. And they'll look in secular work to do that. And less in God's Word. Number four, the postmodern insistence of tolerance is winning over the Christian church. There is an overwhelming fear of being labeled judgmental. I saw that and I thought, that is so true. I think that's one of our biggest problems. How many people in here have been called judgmental? I believe probably we all have. You're in your group of friends, you're in your family or whatever, and something comes up that is not good, is not right, and so we say something about it, and they say what? You're being judgmental. You know, they have attached being judgmental with Christianity. I want to say, I'm not being judgmental, I'm being a Christian. There's nothing wrong with saying what is right and saying what the Bible says about something. And so we get so fearful of saying, well, if I say something, I know we'll hear it, we're around it, and we think, well, you know, if I say something, they're going to think I'm judgmental. They're going to think I have the attitude that I'm better than everyone else. And so we shy away from doing and saying what is right, and we're not outspoken about it. We don't need to do that. Absolutely do not need to do that. Just by saying what is right does not mean we're being judgmental. We need to watch how we say it. and say it in a loving manner, Ephesians 4:15, but we need to say something about it. Number five, the influence of Christianity is on individual lives is largely invisible. That was, I think, the biggest shocker to me in reading that. Don't you think? The influence of Christianity on individual lives is invisible, meaning that it's not making a change in people's lives. Those who profess to be Christians are not showing themselves to be Christians. You know, Paul, in talking about Christianity, he talks about how it's a process to where we die to ourselves and we're living for Christ. On one occasion he says, it's no longer I that live, but Christ that lives in me, Galatians 2:20. And so there is no way, if we are Christian, a practicing Christian, that people cannot look at us and see a difference in our life. There's no way. And what this survey is saying is, well, the influence of Christianity, you can't even see it. Those people that profess to be Christians, you can't even see it in their life. I want to look at Job for just a moment. Turn, if you will, to Job chapter 2. Job was certainly a man of integrity, and it is said that is said over and over again throughout the book. Job chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. Says, again, there was a day when the sons of man came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From roaming about the earth and walking around on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil, and he still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to ruin him without cause." Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. However, put forth your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face." God looks down and he sees Job, and he is proud of Job and who he is. And look at the way that he describes Job as a man, first of all, his servant, as a man who is blameless, a man that is upright and walking in integrity. Could that be described of me? Could I be described like that? And so God's saying, look at my man Job. And Satan is basically saying, a man will do anything for his life. You know, he will basically give up anything to save his own neck. Take enough away from Job and touch his life, and he's going to curse you to your face. And he will no longer walk in integrity. Look at Job 27. We know the account of Job and what all happens to him, and look at how he continues to walk in his integrity. Here is one of his friends, Bildad, who is trying to shake him up, is trying to get him to turn his back on God. He's basically saying, "You're nothing to God. God is up here, you're way down here," and he actually calls him a maggot or a worm, you know, to God. "You don't mean anything to God. Why don't you curse him?" Look at what he says. Look at what Job says to him, 27 verse 3. "For as long as life is in me and the breath of God is in my nostrils, my lips certainly will not speak unjustly, nor will my tongue mutter deceit. Far be it from me that I should declare you right. Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me. I hold fast my righteousness and will not let it go. My heart does not reproach any of my days." Wow. Job says, as long as I live, I don't care what happens to me, as long as I live, I'm going to live for the Lord. I'm going to live a life above reproach. I'm going to walk in integrity, and I'm going to live for the Lord. Now let's look at another passage, chapter 31. And here is where Job asserts his integrity once again, starting with verse 4 there. He's talking about God. He says, "Does he not see my ways? Does God not see my ways and number all my steps? If I have walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened after deceit, let him weigh me with accurate scales and let God know my integrity." Job is saying, "I have nothing to hide. You know, let him weigh me with accurate scales. I don't care. I have nothing to hide. There's nothing that I've said, nothing that I've done that I'm ashamed of and that I'm having to hide. What a testimony. Don't you think? What a testimony. Can I say that? I have nothing to hide. Let God weigh me with accurate scales. Let God be there in my conversation at work with my family. Let God be there in every aspect of my life and hear every word I say and everything that I do. Let Him see and know everything, because He does anyway. But are we willing to say, go ahead, God, do that, because I have lived a life of integrity? Our influence and our integrity matter to God. Do we realize that? It matters a lot to God. Patrick Morrill. Now, here's another man who is not a member of the Lord's Church, but he has written a lot of good Christian literature, and he says in this book that he wrote, I Surrender, and I thought this hit the nail right on the head. The church's integrity problem is the misconception that we can add Christ to our lives but not subtract sin. It's a change of life without a change of behavior. That says it all right there, does it not? That's what we're seeing around us today. That people want to become a member of the church, and they want to be called a Christian, and they want the blessings of being a Christian and the confidence and the peace of that, but they don't want to give up the sin that is in their life. And you can't have it that way. We've looked at a problem that we see in our nation. And we can see it in surveys, we can see it going to work and around about us. We have a problem of living our Christianity out in our life. I don't like pointing out a problem without pointing out some solutions. And so here's four prescriptions that can help us live a life of integrity. First of all, align our will and our walk with God's Word. Psalm 119, 59. I thought about my ways and turned my feet to your testimonies. That's what we've got to do. I've looked at my behavior and my way of life, and I'm turning to do His will. We've got to be willing to do that. Secondly, choose what is best over what is good. So often we choose those things that are good in life, but they're not the best thing for us. Choose what is best over what is good. Thirdly, live life from an eternal perspective rather than a worldly one. You know, so often Christians live no different than the rest of the world. We have something else we're looking forward to, do we not? And that's what Paul's saying here in Romans chapter 8. For those who live according to the flesh, they set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. He says to those in Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, that if you've risen with Christ, seek those things that are above and not the things of the world. And so we have a different perspective on life. We need to be thinking about the life hereafter more than this life. Fourth, and maybe the main one, is be holy. What does that mean? Be separate and set apart from sin and set apart for God's own purpose. This passage here in 1 Peter 1, 15 and 16 says, but as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all of your conduct, because it is written, be holy for I am holy. I can remember when I became a Christian, I had to give up a lot of stuff. I had to give up a lot of friends that I had, and I had to give up a lot of habits that I had that were not good. And I can remember being dogged for that. I can remember friends that I had who said, Mark has changed. He's not living anymore, you know. He's not living anymore. And I can remember saying to one of them, I'm not living. It's not that I'm no longer dying. Because outside of Christ, we're dying. There are things that we have to give up. Being holy is not something that we do by accident. It's something that is intentional. It's something that we have to set our minds to do. And it's not something that is an ability. It's an attitude. It's not that so-and-so has the ability to be holy, but I don't have that ability. We all have that ability. It's an attitude that we have, that we're going to be set apart from sin and I'm living my life for the Lord. And that's something that we have to do in this world, as hard as it is sometimes. There are three things that are so important to every one of us, and that's who we are, where we are, and what we've done in life. You think about it, those are three things: who we are, where we are in life, and what we have accomplished in life. Those are three things that we think of more than anything else. God is not impressed with my credentials, but with my character. Think about that. He's not impressed with those things that I have accomplished, but who I am. God is not impressed with my ability, but with my availability. Am I available to serve Him? Do I make the time? God is not impressed with me, but with my usefulness. Think about that. God's not impressed with who I am necessarily, but whether or not I'm useful to Him. We've got to live a life that is above reproach. We're not going to bring anybody to Christ if we don't live a life, if they don't see that we're any different than anybody else. And so often, and I'm not talking necessarily about anybody in this congregation, but as a whole, you can look at survey after survey concerning this, and as a whole, the Christian life is no different than any other life that is being lived. A life outside of Christ is the same as someone who professes to be a Christian. Why is that? Well, that author pretty much summed it up. We think that we can have Christ plus our sin. We have to live a life that is set apart from sin. We've got to live a life that is going to draw people. We've got to be, as Jesus says, salt and light. People that are going to draw people to Jesus Christ by our attitude and by our works, by the way that we live in this life. It might be that you're not a Christian. We want to invite you to become one. It might be that you are a Christian and that you have not been faithful. Maybe you've not lived a life of integrity. Might be that you've been a Christian only by name and you've obeyed the gospel and you're a Christian when you're here, but when you go out into the workplace and in the rest of the world, you kind of just fit in with everybody else. Recommit yourself to the Lord. If you've sinned in a public way, then please come forward and make that known, and we'll pray with you or for you. Please come forward while we stand and sing.